Blog Talk
What's up, everybody?
Radio.
It's that time again on a Wednesday evening at the 8 to 9 p.m. hour. I am the person known as Citizen Payne, and I am the son, and I'm just paying attention to some of this breaking news about all this stuff that the tenant at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is doing. You've reached the K. Thompson Live Show. My mom is taking a little break. She might join us in a little bit or maybe not, depending on how she's feeling. But today is the day before the holiday they call Thanksgiving. And, we were thinking about not doing the show, but as I hear some of the people talk for the second time tonight, I heard someone on one of the Talking Head shows talking about, as I sign off, telling people not to talk politics at Thanksgiving and this and that, and you know how they say that, don't talk politics with your family, you know. And it's interesting to me because people who don't want to talk politics with their family are the people who have the luxury not to, you know. And it's always kind of interesting to me how they want to say that, because when you're from a community that's been kind of oppressed and kind of put upon and set back and treated like second-class citizens, the politics, the issues of the day, the issues of the community are about survival and freedom. So it's not so much politics, like it's a lofty thing, a lofty concept, some sort of lofty idea. It's they say, oh, politics is local. That's because it's the issues concerning people in a community, everyday issues. And it's just interesting to me how certain people from certain communities can afford to say, just don't talk politics at home, because, you know, I guess in certain white communities, it's very common to have probably people from different political parties. Excuse me. I was going to say you could have Republicans and Democrats within the same family, where you usually find within a minority family, certainly I can only speak from black family's perspective, you would assume them to be Democrats because Democrats are about getting black people all of their rights, civil rights. So you're going to go roll with the party that's going to be pro making sure you have freedom. And it's just, it doesn't seem to be a thing that's of choice, but obviously you have black Republicans now. That's my thought on the process. Let me bring my brother Byron Saunders in here, one of our co-hosts. Byron, how do you feel about that? You know, I was just talking about a little on my mind about how the luxury of some people that are able to say, just don't talk politics at the table. You know, we don't have that luxury. You know, a lot of black people don't have a lot of luxuries that the larger dominant population has had for years, even though there are some black people who want to act like we have those luxuries, you know, when they go to these Trump rallies and show up at the White House with their red hats. You know, we don't have those kind of luxuries that they somehow inside their head make up that we have. You know,
well,
I mean,
that's
the reality.
My take on Thanksgiving and the holiday from now to the end of the year, Eric, is this. And this is real simple. You see, it's like family, friends, loved ones, the reasons for the season of the harvest and celebrating the birth of the Prince of Peace are all about the five core principles of being a good steward of planet Earth and sharing the blessings of prosperity, and also the idea of achieving peace on Earth, goodwill to all men, women, children, and nations. Now, what are those five core principles, Eric? Feed the hungry, clothe the naked, shelter the homeless, heal the sick and comfort them, and give hope to the hopeless. Nothing else really matters. And if you're not doing those five things, what are you doing here on planet Earth?
Those are the five core principles of what, Christianity?
Of just being a good steward of planet Earth.
Forget
about
planet Earth. Okay,
religion.
Just being a good steward of human.
Yeah,
okay, right,
yeah. Because, I mean, ultimately, why do we celebrate Thanksgiving? Giving is because the silo is full, the harvest just was taken, you know,
mm-hmm.
You have an abundance of leftover, and in the process of fellowship, Now think about this. What
is this in the
historic?
Well, let me take baby steps. Have you walk me through it? So is this within the historical myth slash story that is told that the pilgrims? You're saying that their storage bins were full and they were thankful that they had enough and had made it through that first rough season of survival here in this new land. Is that the historical reference tied to that concept, or? Okay.
No, because the pilgrims and the first settlers were abusive of the Native Americans.
Okay,
so
you see what I'm doing? I'm having you walk us through it, because the common knowledge thing of us with the Charlie Brown going up, with the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, the little stuff that the history, the little misguided history, miseducation history that we had in grade school was that they were sitting around, a little encampment or area that they had developed or had settled, and you know it all was peaceful, and the Native Americans were bringing corn, and they love that's the image, mythological, whatever the word is, mythological as it seems, or commercial or cartoonish as it does seem, that is the image that comes to mind. So when you speak, like you're talking, I want to make sure that anybody listening to us understands that from an actual historical standpoint, that image in your mind probably didn't happen the way you want to believe it, as are most of myths that are told in this country.
Yeah, and so basically the notion is, if you acknowledge we as people of the land, there's a part of our process of respect for the land is that upon the harvest. I mean, you could call it a spiritual and religious celebration if you choose to, but it's basically mankind's respect for the land and how to grow your crops. And then once you've settled, think about these. And if these are those five core things and not the reasons why you're here, you need to consider the errors of your ways and recognize that you might be responsible for the problems of this world, because you are certainly not part of its solution. And so prepare your tables. Share your prosperity. These are holy days, no matter what religion. And get ready to fellowship with your neighbor and pledge together to bring peace on earth, goodwill to all men, women, children, and nations. Love is the most powerful force in the universe, okay? Second to that is a good meal. Is a good meal,
And that's all, I feel you. That's all great, and there are those of us who are walking in that light, but, the forces of evil are strong around us, there are those of us that think that made-up image that's in their mind of the Native Americans, the Indians, the savages, one of the big events on Thanksgiving is the football game. If it could be between the Cowboys and the Redskins, that was always a great rivalry. And I'm thinking about
Detroit. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm in particular in terms of the Redskins because of the historical reference significance. But and I've seen various people promoting the shirts, walking around with a Redskin, Washington Redskins type shirt, but it says Washington Caucasians on it.
Yeah.
And just
now,
to add that element so people can see how it feels. And, this guy, I've seen some of his stuff on Facebook, who's saying he got some very negative stuff from some people. But, I say that's part of the whole image and the myth of the history of this country, Thanksgiving included, and there's people who want to hold on to and think that superiority, that conquering of this land is actually true, and they want to hold on to that and maintain it for whatever reason, the hatred within them.
Now,
those are the ones that believe all that stuff.
I'm going to share with you a Thanksgiving story that is absolutely true. Started in 1974. As a soup kitchen, and in the basement of the West Hunter Street Baptist Church. That's the same church that Ralph Abernathy pastored during the Civil Rights days. Now, Hosea Williams started that in 1974. And since that time, every year, celebrating Thanksgiving, Christmas, Martin Luther King Day celebration, and Easter, they serve, tomorrow they will serve upwards of 10,000 people in Atlanta, Georgia, at the World Congress Center. 10,000 people, Eric, getting a meal, getting access to free getting access to free clothes, getting access to health care issues, getting access to a haircut or a beauty selection. All this happens annually. And you know what? They get no government subsidies. You want the actual miracle of the loaves and the fishes? That is it. And last year, my sons and I served in the food line. We served the people. I wanted them to have to be a witness to it. They actually wanted it to do it. And this year, after last year doing it, they're going back to do it again. That happens every year since 1974. And of the last 15 years or so, they served 10,000 people on tomorrow. So I ask you, going back to those five core principles, feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, sheltering the homeless, healing and comforting the sick, and giving hope to the hopeless, what else are we supposed to be doing on Thanksgiving? Yeah, I like the notion of watching the football game, you know, sitting back with my stomach full, but how much food do we literally throw away after the Thursday? How much is going into the garbage can, and how many people in the world are starving? And then we ramp it up by going to spend money and get online for Black Friday's Christmas sales that are already cheap, you know, cheapened by the fact that they're throwaway inventory. And then on Monday, Cyber Monday, you're spending money again. You're not helping the country. You're not helping the world. You're not helping your brother. You see, we've engaged our mentality into a perverted view of our brothers and sisters keepers. So we have someone in the office of in Washington D.C. who doesn't believe in feeding the hungry, or you know, he wanted to give a pardon to the carrots and the peas. What an idiot!
Right.
Okay.
Right. I mean, you know,
even though he said it in jest, the fact
what
that
did he say again?
He wanted to pardon the peas and the carrots along with the two turkeys that he gave a pardon to. All right? So you get out of jail free for the turkeys. But in the meantime, the people who are coming in from the exodus from El Salvador are going to be facing Uncle Sam's, we don't want you here, no dinner, no comfort, no help or assistance, no shelter for the homeless, because these are homeless people that are coming to our borders. See what I'm saying? So where is, compassion, a nation that has compassion for it, those that have the least of them, is a nation that is a world leader. We have a world leader who is only interested in the sales of weapons of mass destruction and death.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess he would be the definition of an oligarch, gangster, power broker, or political power broker? I mean, that's who Trump is. I mean, you know, he's a he's an unscrupulous kind of criminal-minded rich guy, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they're semi, I guess, call himself a businessman, but clearly they've been breaking the law for years and tax laws and the things that they've been skirting around. And he's a criminal. And people keep acting as if this criminal is going to start acting like a president. And it's just constant kind of mild surprise to me or mild amusement how people every day keep talking about this man like he's going to eventually do the right thing or that he's operating within some parameter of norms. And he is not. He's doing everything that a criminal does, right? Making up shit stuff as he goes along, decided to do whatever he wants to do, attacking other people, accusing people of the crimes that he's committing and the lies that he's telling. I mean, you know, wanting to put the people who are righteous in jail, you're right, the criminal wants to lock the other people up that are going after him, right? So, I mean, all of this stuff is classic, you know, criminal behavior to me. And certainly unethical and what, every other word you can think of. So to me, people always constantly talking about him like he's a real president or whatever. I mean, you know, America really is under siege by this guy and his administration. And and all of these people that are complicit with him or that are his accomplices in what he's trying to do, you know, they probably will not be held accountable. I mean, you know, you have to start with the Republican Party. All of them are complicit.
Yeah.
Well as about 62 million Americans, right? So,
yes,
you know.
That's true. But an amazing statistic that jumped out at the midterm elections that there were 8.6 million more people who voted in the midterm elections than voted in the general election previously held, where this Mr. Orange is in the office. So ultimately,
right,
here's the statistic that shows, here's the stat that really stands out. Of those 8 million people, you would think there would be more control based on representation per 100 or 400,000 people in the manner in which Senate and the Congress are formed. Because of gerrymandering, because of district lines drawn that violate Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act, which was gutted recently, is the very reason why we need to have the Voting Rights Act ratified again, because the Republican Party actually has ceded more of their representative based on gerrymandering and not on public vote. That's criminal.
You mean the ones that are in there now, they got it because of
right.
They're representing gerrymandered districts as opposed to actually getting the votes, right?
Actually getting the votes. That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a broken system right now. And I'm very proud of the fact that right now we got three individuals who are ready. I mean, battle tested ready for national political presence. That's Beto O'Rourke. He has a $38 million treasure chest after even losing in Texas, but he came within a hair's breadth of beating Cruz. And he now has $38 million ready to invest his next career move. You've got Andrew Gillum out of South Carolina.
Florida.
And then Stacey Abrams in Georgia. Now, historically, this is where history is very important, Eric. After Reconstruction or during Reconstruction, do you know that there were more African-American representatives in the South Carolina Congress than there were white folks?
Yeah.
Think about that.
As part of the legislature, right?
As part of the legislature, that's right.
Right.
And then
I thought it was on a national level. You just talk about in the South Carolina House. I thought it was in the Capitol when the actual the federal.
No, because in the federal, we still had the northern states, but But technically, and it's very ironic that you're one of your most racist states flying the Confederate flag still until the sister tore it down is South Carolina. Had more black representatives in their legislature than they had white folks. In fact, there were more blacks in the state than there were white people.
Okay, and that was the first time that the vote was exercised by African Americans?
Yes.
I see, and that was quickly taken away, and they did put various programs in place.
That's right. So you see, I mean, I know last week I mentioned about the notion of having a constitutional amendment in which our state, federal, and local politicians take an oath that it's against white supremacy and racism, because at the point at which where we are right now, the Southern strategy is all about make America white again.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's being played out as we speak. Right now in Mississippi, we got a woman, a white female, who laughs and jokes about lynching and voter suppression. Mike Epps actually has a chance of winning. You know, but there, and I didn't know this until I heard this evening. There are 80-some African-American mayors in the state of Mississippi.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable.
That's remarkable. Jackson, Mississippi, the largest city in the state, has an African-American mayor.
Right, right. And that's where it has to begin in a lot of these places, on the local level,
exactly.
Because the state, you know, electing these people to the county level, and they move up from the municipal to the county,
yes,
to the state level. State level is where they draw these congressional districts. So
yeah,
that's where it begins. And, you know, and the situation with judges and things like that, a lot of them in those state levels, right? State legislatures approve. So a lot of these judges at a lot of these state levels, and I guess circuit court levels too, to a certain degree, if I'm not mistaken. So, and
so
speaking of judges, go ahead, you finish your point.
Well, I was just going to say, the flip side of the midterms is that we showed the Southern strategy that we can defeat them. We have not only a movement that is made up of, and of course the statistics have already been vetted out, that the reason why there was a blue wave was because of the increase in African-American votes. That was just released yesterday, okay? So what does that tell you, Eric? What does that – you're a very smart man. What does that tell you for any of the upcoming elections?
Oh, yeah, you're saying that the more African-Americans were voting in this – that
yes,
more people are engaged. What it really tells me is that the increase in number of voters coming out for the midterm than the general is that we need to build. If we can build upon that, that's increasing the number of voters turning out. Right? That increased the number of voter turnout.
Exactly.
You know, and
we need to do it again, definitely
in 2 years.
That's right. We have what will be considered a coalition of the majority. And that's what we have to stop thinking and acting like we are a minority. We are not a minority. And when your mindset has been set in as a minority, you ultimately end up abdicating some of your power because you're not in full belief that you have the authority to act and stand and proceed as a majority.
Exactly, and that coalition is exactly the coalition that Stacey Abrams was talking about that she put together, you know, and it's kind of really also that kind of Obama coalition that he got so many people excited to come out and vote those years ago. The young people, the minorities, the gay people, all the coalition that decided to come. Yeah, you want to?
Right.
Yeah, okay. Great. All right, yep. So, talking about some other speaking, I wanted to veer off into the judge. I'm just noticing how, you know, Trump, this guy, he gives something every day. Something he gives us something to talk about every day. And I'm noticing I haven't really been paying in-depth attention to his latest squabbles with John Roberts and the Admiral who got Bin Laden, but. You know, and in his attempts also to make sure that he covers for the Saudi prince who ordered the killing of Khashoggi. It's just this guy is. It should be obvious to everyone that this man, anybody who disagrees with him, he goes after, and it's clear that, like I said, that's what criminals, that's what people who are trying to be dishonest and stuff do. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, you go in the what was the issue? I don't know exactly what the issue was with the Supreme Court. Well, he tried to say something about Obama judges and whatever, Republican judges or whatever, and I guess Robert shot back and took offense to that. But, you know, it's just unbelievable that everybody, that people can't see, that just because people, other people disagree with this individual, he goes after them. And that's kind of like the oldest thing in the book, you know. It's almost like we're
right,
one of those
right.
those kind of spy movies or whatever, where everybody knows who the villain is. But, you know,
exactly.
Or like a murder mystery or a cop thriller, everybody knows who the killer is, and him and the lead guy catching him are toying with each other, you know, because the Hannibal Lecter type character, nobody, we don't have the evidence. So it's like,
right.
You know that I know, and we all know that you're bad, and you know you're bad, and I know you're bad. You know that I know you're bad, but we just can't get you yet. And
yeah,
only people
yet.
That don't know are the stupidest people that come into the theater that don't know the villain is the villain. You know, and that's the thing I feel about with Trump. I mean, you know, it's like, come on, man. When is the
right.
movie going to end? When are we going to wrap it up and, you know, call this guy what he is, you know? And it's unbelievable that, I guess it is believable, clearly, that some people, you know, root for the dark side.
Well, right. But I think that what we're seeing and being a witness to is the noose is closing around his neck. And there's exits are being shot down and closed out by every corner he thinks he has a wedge in. Even from
mm-hmm.
Chief Justice Roberts, who just rebuked him completely this afternoon.
Right.
And it's like, you know, your Supreme Court that he's so, you know, stacked with two of his choices are in jeopardy of being overruled by constitutional law. Okay. And to go against the basic principles of the Constitution would end up probably impeaching the Gorsuch or the last one, Brett. You know, so it's like, I think we're about to see from the Mueller investigation some serious indictments being handed down to people who participated in some of the highest acts of criminal treason this country has ever seen. And it's very delicate. It's extremely
delicate.
It
is delicate because as they're catching up to him, he keeps, you know, and just another one of those movie images as they're catching up to him. He keeps turning over furniture in their path, to trip over as they're getting ready to catch him, because he keeps trying to find people at these various levels and positions in government. You know, let me place someone like Matt Whitaker in place to slow them down, to sabotage the investigation. Let me go over here and put this in place. Like I saw a quick flash on TV that three of his buddies are running the VA now. And they haven't even really been approved, the three friends of his. You know, so it's really a race to see how much stuff this guy can mess up within the government
mm-hmm.
before they catch up to him and the authorities,
mm-hmm.
so to speak, catch him and take him where he needs to go. And you know, you're just hoping that he cannot do how much damage he's going to do. You're hoping that, you know, the damage that this man could do to this country. And to do to you know, the rule of law, all the rules that they've set up can be curtailed. The funny thing about it is the very system and society that was built by this dominant culture is being torn down to a certain degree by one of their own, who can only who used and pimped their ideology and pimped their theory to get to where he wanted, and now he's even turning his back on them and pimping them, all for his purposes, right? I mean, he said he's a nationalist, and all, of course, all the racists and the prejudiced people, that's my man, and the conservative, that's my man. Now he's getting to the point where he's threatening even the very existence of the foundation of their country and their society that they've built. And it's really interesting to see how these people are willing to go down with him, even though he's bringing their entire belief system and their society to the brink, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's really, you know, the way he's doing the FBI and the CIA and calling into question and doubt the validity and the integrity of the of all of law enforcement and the intelligence agencies, you know. So it's really, you know, something that is damaging to the very society and system that they built. Hold on, do you want to get in here, Ma, and get down on the conversation? Yeah, okay. But, yeah, so, I mean, it remains to be seen how far they're going to ride with the guy. It seems like they're going to ride all the way with him.
They have committed themselves to an end game, which is, unfortunately for the GOP, has a no-exit strategy and will self-implode based on the weight of its own insanity. I mean, think about
right.
it. Where else can they turn to? They're only right now, his base, and I've been saying this, it's amazing how it has not changed above 35%. His base is somewhere between 30 and 35%. And we keep promoting the base as if it's a majority. It is not. And the talking head station, with the exception of Fox, is beginning to lock in on that. And I've heard them vocalize it, saying specifically that his base is only 30 to 35%. So it is an active minority, yes, but they just got their butts kicked in the midterm by 8.6 million more voters.
Right.
You can't just ignore that.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's true. And hopefully the Democrats will need to take the same game plan, build upon the current game plan that we were operating with to build on those number of votes and to really just because we need to take clearly the way these guys are playing, we need to play the same way. We need to take back all branches of the government. And all three branches of the government and just push all of our legislation through because they can't even be trusted to steward the country in good faith. You know, if every time the Republican Party gets in control, they are going to bring the country back 4 or 5 steps. I mean, literally to the point, I mean, a conservative ideology is one thing. But when we're talking about an individual who inspires and incites hate and division and violence amongst the citizens, that's taking it back to a place that I'm sure that it doesn't want to go. And if this is the guy that the Republicans want to put forth, and this is the type of individuals they want to continue to put forth time and time again, then they can't, you know, they can't be trusted to be good stewards of the country. I mean, he talked about the American carnage. Was over. The American carnage and chaos began when he took oath, where everything started going crazy. So, I mean, if this is their example of making America right again or whatever, great again, then no, this takes the country back to a place, you know, where people can't even be safe, you know. You just put it to your ear. Hold on for a second. Just get it. Yeah, there you go. There you go. Put it to your ear. There you go. There you go. And we're joined by... my mom, Kay Thompson Payne, also the show.
Oh, it's Kay Thompson
on?
Live now.
We got Byron. Byron Saunders is on.
Byron?
Yes. Hi, Kay.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Well, I'm blessed.
Yeah, we're
on
live
ready for
here.
Thanksgiving.
Yep.
I'm ready, Kay. I'm going. Now, you know Santa Claus is coming to town tomorrow. I'm going to get on a mega bus and go to Washington, D.C. to visit my fiance tomorrow and her family.
Oh, terrific, terrific. When are you getting married?
March 28th, 2019.
Oh, really?
Saturday.
Wow.
So
am I invited to the wedding?
Absolutely.
2000 when? We didn't get that. 2000 what?
2019. Next year, March 28th.
Okay. I didn't know if you wanted to make that out loud. You got conveniently kind of drowned out by my mom, so
no.
I didn't know. If you wanted to take advantage of that, or
it's all right for all those who were waiting in line. I'm sorry, I'm off the block.
I'm quite sure there are quite a lot of them. You know,
oh,
knowing
well,
you, Byron.
They are too. Yeah, right.
By the way, your fiance
I'm,
just called and she said she's listening in. So
that's good. I work for points. I work for points now. Okay.
Oh, really?
You know,
so what's going on in the big city there?
Well,
what's going on in New York City?
Yes.
What's going on in New York?
Well,
New York is a pain in the neck to visit, to even live, and you can't get through.
What makes you say that?
Wait a minute. You can't get through. You can't get into the city. The traffic is awful. Going into New York a couple of times, we're stuck at the tunnel, like about 30 minutes to 35 minutes. Yeah. And sometimes longer. And it is it is crowded with people. It is absolutely crowded. And if you drive in, there's no place to park, of course. So that's been a no-no for a long period of time. Even though, but when I was on the air, I had to drive. But anyway, and what about the clubs? Are there still clubs? Are there jazz still going on? What about down in the village?
It's interesting because the clubs that are profiting now, and they're in and they're out. So sometimes they're up for maybe 3 years and then they're gone. But in the gentrification process, Harlem has more clubs now than they've had in quite some time. Even in Bed-Stuy has clubs that are trafficked by white and black. I mean, serious clubs, jazz, freeform music. It's really on that side of it, it's encouraging. But, you know, the colonizers don't have much way of respecting the cultural significance of some of those communities, because they think it's now their community, you know, and there has to be some conversation where the both sides acknowledge and recognize the history. Because if you don't know the history of Bed-Stuy and recognize it, why it became significant, why Weeksville is such an important part of the Brooklyn community. Weeksville was one of the free African-American communities that established for those to own their homes. And all that is left of Weeksville now is a historic landmark and land that it sits on. But it's like if you moving into that community and don't know the history, then you begin to abuse or disrespect the local people for why they chose that community.
Yeah, okay, so, but what about the what about the entertainment in New York? New York used to be the hotbed of jazz and a whole lot of other things.
Yeah.
What about the Apollo Theater? Are they still existing or what?
The Apollo is still in existence. The clubs that were used to proliferate, you know, Small's Paradise and the other clubs, Minton's is back open. Jazz clubs are actually starting to open back up along the traffic along Amsterdam. Yeah, so I mean, they're small, but you know, the longevity is about how long are they able to stay there? Because a Small's Paradise, which lasted through several generations of time, when they closed, you lost culture, okay? To replace it with something that has little or no historic background is okay if the music is good, you know, because you got places like Mr. Henry's, they just closed, and now they've opened up to a seafood place. That used to be the site where Birdland was at 107th and Broadway. You know, you lose clubs. Now, Smokers is doing okay. Cleopatra's Needle is on Broadway. But there's some new spots along Amsterdam between 135th and 145th that are starting to attract a lot more attention than they used to.
How are they attracting the attention? What about their advertising? They're not doing much advertising over here in Jersey.
Not much advertising. It's still catering more to the local.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a slow process.
Yeah.
Right. So you sat down with this book here, the Michelle Obama book, and you have two books.
And I'm just getting into Michelle Obama's book.
Mm.
And you know how much of respect we have for Michelle Obama. She is a first
and only,
I'm telling you. And so I'm anxious to read that book. But right now I'm looking at the autobiography of Black Jazz. And, you know, so I was looking up, you know, something about like Savoy and, you know, and a whole lot of other things, you know, and different jazz people like Dizzy Gillespie and Cy Oliver, Clark Terry, Nancy Wilson, Joe
yeah.
Williams, and a whole lot of other people, because my brother was such a jazz person who, you know, stayed in and out of the New York scene for a long period of time. And then, of course, the very famous history, you know, of the African-American community, his contribution to jazz and the clubs.
Yeah.
Well,
so.
It seems to me that jazz is African-American music, and I was just, when the title of your book says Black Jazz, kind of to me seems like a misnomer, because jazz is black music, isn't it? And just...
Well, there's jazz and then there's black jazz.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. It seems as though uh-huh. jazz, there's no need for it. It seems like it's a double positive to say black jazz, because jazz is black music, music invented by African Americans.
Listen, the music by African Americans has a certain beat
mm-hmm.
and a certain funk to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right, Byron?
Hello,
you
still there? Yeah, I'm still here. Is this a new book, Kay, that you...
Yes, it's the autobiography of Black Jazz by Dempsey Travis.
Yeah, but it's not really
Pick
new, because you've had that for a while, right?
I just picked it up not too long ago.
Really? What's the
And
copyright
some of the
on
people,
that?
And I'm not looking at that right now. But
yeah, I don't
some
think
of
that's
the people,
that new. I've seen that
Some of the people
the
that they have, are talking about is Duke Ellington, for instance. I'm talking about these older, you
yeah.
know, jazz people. Nat King Cole, of course, Cab Calloway, Louis Armstrong, Lionel Hampton, and the people from
right.
Chicago, you know, and the, you know, and then the more current people. And and then you just don't see or hear that kind of music anymore because of the fact that it has died out or it's not existed, or maybe it's existing and I just don't know about it.
Right.
However,
jazz, yes,
you
still,
know,
jazz is still.
But I have cousins who, you know, are up to date on, you know, even they are, you know, not too interested in the city anymore. I think mainly because of the traffic in New York. You know, it's difficult.
Yeah,
it's really difficult.
Right.
Yes,
yeah. Right.
But
there, there's no
once
place
again,
to park.
Right.
There are clubs springing up in Queens as well that are
mm-hmm.
focusing on jazz, like Flushing Town Hall is one of
uh-huh.
them. They've they've done quite well in catering to the Queens community. Of course, the Louis Armstrong House Museum's new center that's $23 million will be open next spring, and
oh,
that
really?
Will have a small. They have a small jazz club in there that'll feature, of course, jazz artists 52 weeks of the year. So it's
wow.
Places like that, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. All right. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. And of course, there's always the Blue Note. There's always, you know.
That's still in existence.
Bat Birdland. Yeah.
Palladium?
And yeah. The
Palladium?
Yeah.
Really?
The Palladium is the Palladium. In fact, somebody told me someone was filming in Studio 54 recently. And I'm thinking,
really?
Wow. Yeah. I was like, okay, that's interesting. knowing that past of Studio 54, my gosh, you know.
Yeah.
So, of course, you remember we had the days we had Limelight. And I mean, these were disco houses back then. This is
uh-huh.
like.
Right.
And all kinds of craziness down there. But there is I guess as a result of Lincoln Center Jazz, it has spawned a new appreciation for certain
mm-hmm.
types of jazz. Although it's still, as much as it's America's music, it's indigenous music, it still has little favor when it comes to the pop, the charts, you know, and the music awards programs. It's still you're still hard pressed to find them. In fact, you know, we lost passed away, Hargrove, the trumpet player, Danny Hargrove passed away 2 weeks ago.
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm not quite familiar with
yeah.
that.
I don't remember that name.
Not quite as familiar with
a trumpet player.
A trumpet player, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But downtown Newark, there's some interesting jazz clubs. And Newark is thriving. Have you been downtown Newark, New Jersey?
Oh, yeah.
Under,
I'm impressed.
You know, Mayor Raz Baraka. Raz Baraka has done wonders for Newark. He's good for Newark, yeah.
Let me, except for the, they had little problems with the snowstorm last week. I know the city, New York was seemed like it was equally, it came to a standstill. Was that the situation there last week for you guys, Byron?
Yes, it was. I mean, 5 inches. I was in Harlem at a screening, a film screening, and it took me 2.5 hours to get, no, it took me 3 hours to get from Brooklyn to 122nd and Adam Clayton Powell on the 2 train. The system was at standstill at some point on all, just about every line coming into the city.
Yes, I heard.
You said 5 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah,
from Harlem to Brooklyn?
It took me 3 hours. It took me three hours.
Sometimes
3 hours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And usually only takes an hour and 10 minutes. It took me three hours.
You know, that's something I can't imagine, particularly if you're in if you're doing public transportation, and it's taking you 3 hours to get home, and I can imagine that standing there, it was literally the trains were stopped. So if you were on the train, you
were
stuck on the train for a couple hours, right? As you probably were, right?
For a good 25, 30, 40
minutes. If you were able to get
minutes.
On one.
Well, say
that
again.
Right.
I'm sorry. Say it again.
I was literally stuck on the train for about 30 minutes. Where was I? I was at 79th Street. Just stopped. You know.
Right.
And on express
even if you've ever done that for a couple of minutes, to being stuck on the train with a train full of people at rush town, or rush hour, where everybody's all up on each other for 5-10 minutes is annoying. But you're talking about 30 minutes. When you start talking about, you know, something like that, that's agony.
Yeah.
And the fact that people, you know, if you're doing kind of rush hour and public transportation, you know, it's not like if you happen to be in traffic, I mean, it's messed up for anybody. It happens. I was sitting in a car for about an hour. Couldn't literally go anywhere. But if you have to use the facilities, you're in a lot of trouble. I guess in New York you could get off somewhere and go into a restaurant or the Marriott Marquis, which used to be my Times Square pit stop. But, you know, that is just, you know, you would think that people could have prepared for that a little bit better, you know.
Yeah.
The snowstorm that we had over here, I mean, literally people – well, I was at an intersection where people literally could not move anywhere. It was almost like a movie where traffic was not going in any direction. So hopefully that was their primer, their little preview, and they can get it together and be prepared for if it snows. I understand it was snowing a little while ago, but it's supposedly snow get really cold tomorrow. So hopefully if that's going to be indicative of how the winter is going to be going, that these guys will be prepared for it.
I think that it's going to be even like that or worse, you know, because the traffic isn't going to go anywhere, you know. So you guys are just stuck. Let's face it, all that traffic.
That's true.
You know,
well, the farmers.
So, and then if you even there's not. When I used to come into on a daily basis, going to the WLIB BLS, you know, and we would be stuck in traffic. Never was it like, you know, a couple of times as I've been in New York lately, you know. But it's an exciting city. There's nothing like New York, okay?
It's true.
If you can get there, everyone, good luck.
Yeah,
when you get there,
true.
You have to move around, and that's going to be very difficult because walking along the streets, people
Tonight is the usual traditional night in which people go up to 79th and Central Park West to look at the balloons that are going to be in tomorrow's parade. Even that has got to be too many.
Get that out
people.
Clearly. I couldn't hear you again. Hold on for 1 second, Mom. You said tonight is the traditional night that what happens?
People go up to 79th and Central Park West to look at the balloons for tomorrow's Thanksgiving Day parade to Macy's, and it's, even that has become too many people trying to squeeze in to see the balloon staged before tomorrow's parade.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It's insane. I used to do it, get a cup of hot chocolate and enjoy looking at all the balloons, but not anymore. I'm going to watch it on TV, and then I got to go down to catch a mega bus tomorrow to D.C. down at 34th and 12th, right there across the street from the Jacob Javits Center. But I got to avoid the traffic of the parade.
That's right. And then the traffic on the street, walking on the streets even. You have to plow yourself, plow through the people on the street, you know?
I'm telling you. So at least the number 7 train now goes all the way over to the Jacob Javits Center. So I can get off at 42nd and just catch the number 7 train. It's one stop. It's the last stop. But even so, you still got to deal with the 2 million people who are going to be lined up for tomorrow's parade to get to see Santa Claus come to town. And the temperature, the high tomorrow is going to be 31 degrees, 32 degrees. So it's going to be cold, okay?
I've never seen you. Santa Claus said, the heck with this.
The heck with this.
Exactly. New York City, not here I come.
Right.
But anyway, but the kids, I don't know, you know, the poor little kids, because they loved it, you know, those parades were absolutely... You know, so.
I still get
and
up
then
and
what about the tree? What about the tree?
The tree is there, but it won't be lit until I think December the 7th, somewhere around there. And then they have their usual NBC will have their usual broadcast from Rockefeller Center to light the tree. You know.
Yeah.
So.
And that's always quite an occasion.
New York at Christmas time, like Newark now, because Newark, downtown Newark, is so lit up that you have the Christmas decorations really make the city one of the must-see spots during this time of the year.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I mean, what I'm noticing is the same thing that you brought up about Brooklyn, Bed-Stuy, the little bit of gentrification and people understanding the historical significance of people that have been caretakers of these various communities. Certainly Newark is one that I ride around every day, I see the various areas that are being developed and turned into new neighborhoods, and they don't a lot of times seem like the old neighborhoods, and they don't also seem like neighborhoods that the people that have been there, that have already there, can afford to be in these new buildings, and that's really the concerning thing, that the renaissance that takes place in a lot of these communities includes the people that have traditionally been in the community or been caretakers of the communities, and have kept it vibrant to a certain degree to make it even attractive to these people now that want to move into these urban areas. You know, I mean, I was downtown Hoboken for a while. I haven't been in Hoboken in a long time. And just before the election, I had to go over there to take care of some business. And I was surprised at just how, you know, the areas closer to the water in Jersey are becoming like other boroughs, you know, more boroughs to Manhattan. So we just want to make sure, and I know that it's happened in Hoboken. I'm sure it's happened in Jersey City, that the people who traditionally have been there have kind of lost out in the kind of new redevelopment that's going on in these communities. So one thing I want to make try to advocate for is that in Newark, the Newarkers, traditional Newarkers, are able to enjoy in the renaissance that's taking place in the area.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's winding down. We're going to be winding down right now, being that it's the holiday. We're going to sign off a little bit early, unless you got something you wanted to say to the people, Ma.
No, I want everybody to enjoy the holiday and be safe and, you know, watch out for yourself and just enjoy.
Amen.
Enjoy life. But be careful.
That's right.
There it
is.
Okay?
But be careful.
But be careful. Be aware of your surroundings at all times. And especially, you know, take care of the children. Make sure you keep an eye on them. Hold their hands. Don't let go. Okay. And if you see something going on, you know, in some sort of altercation, walk the other way or run, or get out of town fast.
Right. Exactly.
Well, call the authorities. All
right.
I want to say thank you, everybody, for listening to Kay Thompson Live Show, 8 to 9 p.m. We're on Wednesdays live. You can also listen to us in the archives if you want to listen to any other shows we might have done. There's some pretty good ones. I want to say thank you to Brother Byron Saunders. Safe trips, Brother Saunders.
Absolutely. Peace and love.
The people's...
In the
there
swamp.
It is. Anything else you want to say to the people's?
To my peoples out there, listen, prepare your tables to share your prosperity during these holidays,
right.
Holy days.
Right.
And get ready to fellowship with your neighbor and pledge together to bring peace on earth, goodwill to all men, women, children, and nations. And, have that extra slice of pumpkin pie while you're at it. Remember, love is the most important and most powerful force in the universe. Okay, happy Thanksgiving, my friend.
Yeah, and respect your neighbor.
All right, thank you,
That's
Brother
right.
Byron Saunders.
All
we'll
right.
talk
yes,
to you next
sir.
Week there, brother.
All
have
right.
Safe
God bless.
Have a
bye
safe
bye.
Trip.
Thank you,
Take Byron. Care. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay.
Want to say thank you to everybody for listening to the Kay Thompson Live Show. Once again, we can be heard live every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on the Blog Talk Radio Network, blogtalkradio.com/KayThompsonLive. And you can listen to the show's archived at any time. I am the person that's known as the Sun. Or also Citizen Payne, and you are?
Kay Thompson.
All right. And this has been the Kay Thompson Live Show. Thank you, everybody, for listening in.
Have a nice holiday.
We'll talk to you again next week. Take care.